I'm Duncan McLeod, and this is the Tech Central Show. Now, TCS is brought to you by MTN Business. Visit mtnbusiness.co.za to learn more about their products and solutions. And we thank them for partnering with the show to bring you these great interviews. Now, unusually for Tech Central, we're going to be talking about rugby next. It's not a story I've been following terribly closely, but there's been quite a bit of potential corporate action involving SA Rugby. First, there was a $75 million bid from an American company called Ackley Sports Group, which would have seen it buying a 20% stake of South African Rugby Union's commercial rights firm. But that was rejected by some SARU unions or franchises who blocked the deal. And emerging amid all of this is a second bid, this time homegrown, and involving one or two familiar faces in the tech world. And one of them is in the studio with me today. In fact, before I go on, let me introduce my guests. The first is no stranger to Tech Central. Stafford Marcy is a serial tech entrepreneur and chairman of AltVest Capital. It's good to see you, Stafford. It's been a very long time. I hope you're well.
It's been years. I think the last time I physically saw you was pre-COVID.
Prior to COVID, I think you're right.
It's good to be back. Whenever I bump into folks these days, they go, where have you been? What have you been up to? I think when you're sitting on board positions and you're doing what I'm doing right now, you kind of stay away from the public eye much. So it's good to be back.
Great. Now, Stafford, you joined in the studio with by Warren Wheatley, who is chief executive of AltVest Capital. Warren, thanks for time and welcome to the studio.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Excellent. Well, Warren, let me start with you. AltVest, you're part of a consortium that's making a bid for these rights and doing some interesting things, I believe. We're going to unpack that in some detail. But let's chat a little bit first about AltVest and who you are. You describe yourselves as an investment holding company in the financial services space. What are some of your investments and what is your investment philosophy?
So AltVest is effectively a private equity fund that goes out and acquires assets in the market in the same way any private equity fund does. The crucial difference is that to fund that SME or that business or the private equity stake or even an alternative asset, we crowdfund on behalf of the entrepreneur. So instead of us approaching two or three LPs to raise the capital, we approach the market and hope to attract retail investors. And we've built the legal and regulatory framework to achieve that. Now, what that achieves, number one, is that the entrepreneur is able to collect funding from their customers, their communities, and their fans, effectively. For the retail investor, you're suddenly getting access to this asset class that has been the preserve of the ultra wealthy pension funds or other VC funds. So it brings two worlds together, ideas and capital. And those two don't often meet, particularly in the realm of individual retail investors. So that's what AltVest does. Some of our side gigs is to provide debt funding and other solutions to SMEs during the course of that equity or capital raising process. So, for example, an SME that talks to us, we help with their marketing and getting their message out that they're raising capital. We look at their balance sheet and make sure it's fit for purpose. And we solve any gaps we see using our financial services business, for example, to ensure they've got appropriate key man risk, those kinds of stuff. So it's solutioning for SMEs and bringing them closer to their community in what is otherwise an overly complex regulatory framework.
Let me jump in here. What I loved about it and what attracted me to it when Warren approached me for the first time was it's an alternative to a VC model. Right, I come from that world of venture capital, raising funds, investing as an angel investor. And what I loved about this was the participatory long tail impact that it has. I mean, what attracted me was when I spoke to Warren, was going to Bombonani restaurant. So they actually did this with a restaurant, Bombonani in Melville. And we were sitting at the table and he was telling me about how they managed to list Bombonani, effectively creating almost like a pre-IPO mechanism for people to buy equity. And that was interesting. But when I looked at the table, there was a piece of paper on the table with a QR code on it. And you could, if you wanted to tip the waiter or the waitress, you could actually scan that, and instead of tipping them with fiat currency, mm-hmm. you could buy a stake in the business for them. So you could buy a share for the waiter. You could buy a share yourself. There's the guy doing the traffic in the front, directing the parking, etc. He owns an equity stake in the restaurant, all the way through to an institutional investor or a prominent angel investor could do it in the exact same way. I think that impact, that net effect, was quite profound for me, because I'd never seen long tail investment from a retail perspective personified in that particular manner, and that sold me. And I wanted to be a part of that, because I think tech companies struggle with this. I mean, we raise capital, we bring VCs in, we bring angels in, and we create cap tables that are very complicated. Expectations from VCs are like profound, mm-hmm. and I've failed many times at it. Yes, I've had a couple of successes, but I've brought VCs in, and then, you know, at Series B or C, you lost. You're selling the business is scaling, and your exit is almost zero because everyone else's multiples have to vest. And I think that complication in the VC realm in South Africa is very arcane, very exclusive, very few people can get access to it. What AltVest does is essentially open that up. And one of the reasons we wanted to do this interview was I wanted to speak to all the tech companies out there, because we want to open up this portfolio for tech companies also in 2025. I mean, that's why I'm the chairman of this organization. I want to drive it in that direction to actually open up this tech community and say, listen, guys and girls, there's an alternate way to raising capital. In South Africa, raising capital is difficult. Mm. Banking, difficult.
And expensive.
Angels, few. Expensive. VC, I mean, VC feels like private equity in South Africa. It doesn't feel like VC. Mm. There's very few people that, like me, that will come in at a seed round, take the risk, give you a couple hundred thousand, maybe a million or so, and then take you through it. Very few people are capable of doing that in South Africa. So here's AltVest. It's a completely different model, completely different take on it, and I'm very excited about it. And obviously, we want to take this model now all the way to this debacle story, which we'll get to now in a sec.
Yeah. So what type of investments, what type of companies are you typically looking for?
So we were a bit cheeky in the start, and we had to do proof of concept. So the first one we did was this magnificent villa on the Sabi River. We partnered with Kevin Peterson, ex-cricket captain, mm-hmm. ex-Durban boy, and we wanted to show that anybody could own luxury assets on the Sabi River. So this is a lodge in the Sabi, in the Kruger Park on the Sabi River, in one of the top 10 gay wildlife estates in Africa, right? Our neighbors are all dollar billionaires. Right? Okay. So the minimum entry point into that is a 40 million rand piece of land that you still have to erect a home on. Now, these kinds of people are, you know, come in summer year and then they're in Switzerland for, mm-hmm. you know, winter and all that kind of stuff. So we wanted to show that we could find a clever way to have ownership in this actual property, and in a different way to the way REITs do it or other property investments or timeshare, whatever the case may be. And so we did a deal. We bought 50% of the property, and we raised capital by selling that to the frequent guests at the lodge. So we downloaded effectively from the booking app who all the people were, and we started marketing with them, and then our public. And it ended up that two car guards in our office ended up buying shares in this. The property has grown at 25% per annum, and these guys got the benefit of that. So that was a proof of concept. It's not typical of what we're going to do going forward, mm-hmm. But it demonstrated that what it says on the tin is what's in the tin. It works, mm-hmm. right? There were some clever things. People are often ask, why do you list? Why subject yourself to all of that? And one of the reasons and one of the most important things to me is that if you give somebody an asset like this, you need to provide an appropriate and fair exit, right? So one of the reasons private equity is exclusive and exclusive to rich people is because they've got the ability to wait until they get their capital. If you overspend in December, which a lot of people are going to do, you may be vulnerable in January and sell your investment at 10 cents in the rand. And there will be people who will take advantage of those to their benefit. So we had to create a mechanism that provided a quick exit, and there's no better mechanism than a regulated marketplace like the CTSE. So that's one of the issues. The other issue we try to solve is that private equity technically is open to anyone, provided you've got 10, 20, 30, 40 million to put in. Mm-hmm. None of the GPs want to have 2,000 discussions in structuring. Most private equity deals have a GP, and it starts getting unwieldy if there's more than 4 or 5 LPs. So no one wants to do the administration around, even 30 guys would be complex. We've got 2,500 guys now in these various deals, shareholders listed on the exchange. And the other thing is the ticket size needs to be appropriate for the South African wallet. So our Umgani shares were listed at 10 rand a share. Sorry, 1.50 a share. Bambanani at 10 rand a share. And then we also created an asset class. Our next one was Bambanani. And there we wanted to prove that we could raise funding for anybody. This is a restaurant in Melville that has been operating for 15 years, survived COVID, survived economic cycles, survived everything, but couldn't get a meeting with a bank to discuss capital raising. We raised almost 90% of the funding from her existing customer base. Bronwyn Nielsen did a keynote address when we launched, and she expressed her fond memories of her being able to take her kids to this restaurant. They could play and she could start her business and have a glass of wine later in the afternoon. And she remembered the place from sort of 15 years ago when she was starting out. And so that's what Bambanani is. It's a place where families can connect, children can be taken care of, and not like some of our competitors where there's a cage with a jungle gym in, and you throw your kid in and he's fighting viruses and bacteria and bigger kids. This is a place where they learn to paint, they learn poetry, they can make pizzas, they can do art and crafts and that kind of stuff. And so the kids are genuinely taken care of in stimulating educational ways. The food's great. You don't have to have chicken strips and chips or, just the where the basting sauce tastes, makes everything taste the same. And so we decided to try this, and it worked. A year later, the entrepreneur raised sufficient capital to open two new locations, one in Bedford View, and we haven't announced the next one. It also allowed us to buy the old Melville Theatre, which is next door to the restaurant, and that's been revamped into a children's theatre. Where they're going to be doing productions and will be a supper and theater type vibe for kiddies in the day and during school holidays, and an adult theater place in the evening. So that capital and equity capital allows that kind of growth. You can't do that with debt. Mm-hmm. And so this mechanism to raise permanent equity capital is really working. It's functional. And because it's listed, your business isn't impacted if the investor gets into trouble.
When you say it's listed, where is it listed?
On the Johannesburg Stock Exchange.
How does it work exactly?
So just like any other share, as simple as it is to buy a share in Sasol, it's as easy to go and buy one of these instruments in Bambanani or Mganu or Altvest itself. Mm-hmm. And our third one was quite unique as well. You'd have heard of the concept of private credit. Again, it's an asset class that ultra high net worth families and family offices are pouring into. That's where entities get together and do non-bank lending. It's an asset class that is returning between 25 and 30% per annum to its investors. But again, the minimum ticket size is, in South Africa, the cheapest I've seen is 500,000. Now, if you consider that this needs to be such a small percentage of your portfolio, you need to be at least worth 10 million rands to have that 500K as a an appropriate percentage of your exposure to, right? So we created our own private credit fund. It provides debt products to SMEs, and the result has been overwhelming. Like, this is our best product to date. We've supported almost 30 SMEs. We track jobs. We've created or saved almost 1,000 jobs in less than a year of operation. We get funded by large institutions who buy a debt note that's also listed. And retail investors can invest for as little as 3 rand a share, and they get exposure to this IRR of in excess of 25%.
How does it work? Is it through a smartphone app?
No. So any brokerage, if your brokerage is Easy Equities, we're on their list of instruments. If you bank with,
so you just go in there and you can buy Bambanani.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you can buy a share of Mgani Lodge, or you can buy a share of Tech Central.
Okay.
If you wanted to raise capital as Tech Central, you wanted to expand, you had a media play, you'd pitch to us.
Mm-hmm.
We'd look at the play, we'd look at your history, your books. We say, okay, let's go. Either it's debt.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you don't want to give shares. Maybe you want to start off with debt. So you start off with debt. We allocate 5 million to you.
Mm-hmm.
You take the 5 million. We agree upon a payback period associated with that. You do certain things, you hit certain milestones, and we start working with you on a listing. We list Tech Central. All the listeners that love you, they want to be part of Tech Central's success, can go into Easy Equities and buy. We do a big announcement and they can go and buy shares. Suddenly there's liquidity. Suddenly there's a marketplace around Tech Central where someone can buy it. It's as simple as that.
Okay.
Just some nuance, and it does get slightly technical, but we don't actually list that particular business, right? Altvest buys...
It's like a virtual listing.
Yes, it's a synthetic economic linked note.
Okay,
so we give you see-through exposure to that asset, and we issue that off our own balance sheet.
Okay.
What's nice about that is that if you had to do that to Tech Central, we've got the broad shoulders that deal with the administrative and regulatory issues.
Which is a big thing.
Yeah.
If you're listing, the first thing you think your quarterly announcements, your... the tracking, the admin, Altvest is taking care of all of that. You focus on being Tech Central.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the value prop.
And it's very different. We don't have, even though I described ourselves or we identify as a private equity fund, we don't adopt the same model. Mm-hmm. We don't think we're going to come in there and fix the business or grow the business.
I'm guessing you're not even making any warranties about the business.
No, not at all.
No.
It's a risk. You're buying a share. Yeah.
It's a security.
What are we doing is support back in the entrepreneur, right? So we take a board seat with measures in place that if that doesn't work out, we can take that posture, but it's not our intention.
Mm-hmm.
So we let you go, we let you do what you want to do, and we're your big financial services brother in the end. An SME who deals with us should have the same experience that a big bank provides to their customers. So we try and mimic that type of service relationship with SMEs. So they get the feeling of having a discussion with Goldman Sachs, where Goldman Sachs puts all their teams around and does all the stuff and helps them raise capital, that kind of thing.
Okay.
A small restaurant obviously can't afford Goldman Sachs.
Sure. Cool. So what's the revenue model for you guys? Do you collect a fee? Do you take shares in the businesses?
So the first is we take economic exposure always. In other words, in private equity, that's called a carry.
Mm-hmm.
And so we aligned from a capital growth perspective. We charge a capital raising fee between 1% and 3% to the entrepreneur. They would pay that. These days, you pay capital raising fees even for overdrafts. And then we charge a fee to the investor for getting access to that investment opportunity. So like the same way any RA provider charges 3% or 2% to get access to the product. So three revenue streams, capital growth, the investment management fee and the capital raising fee.
Okay. But mostly once-off fees, are they?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So a week or so ago now, I think it was, a press release came out stating that Altvest, together with 7-4, I've never heard of before, Easy Equities and Rainfin had formally submitted an expression of interest to SARU for the, and I'm quoting here, the management and commercialization of the iconic Springbok brand's commercial rights. Warren, can you unpack what this is about and why it's significant?
All right. So to understand what we have done, I want to just discuss what we're trying to undo. So the Ackley deal, they're a private equity fund. They specialize, if you read their website, in managing commercial rights.
These are the Americans whose bid was rejected.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, the reasons why it was rejected is one of the major issues is that they lost the public sentiment. Mm-hmm. The public felt that we were selling our crown jewels, and there was massive unhappiness from the fans, supporters, all that kind of stuff. So that was the major thing that Ackley couldn't overcome. The second thing is that the deal was just bizarre. The advisory fees were estimated to be 15% of the deal.
Good grief.
Yeah, the economics just didn't make sense.
Right. There was no transparency. There wasn't. And the third and the third other important issue was that if you actually looked at Ackley, they didn't seem at least to have the experience to do much better than SARU were doing themselves in managing the commercial rights. So you had these unions who were about to sell the primary funding mechanism that keeps the unions afloat very cheaply, number one. So the deal was inappropriately priced. Number two, there seemed to be rent seekers who were going to be making obscene amounts of money for structuring the deal. And thirdly, the South African public just was fed up with this. They could see all these things, and it just made no sense to anyone. And so Gayton McKenzie, the new sports and art, and so the way SARU works is that they a conglomerate of stakeholders, and those are the rugby unions, so the different teams. They each carry different voting rights. And they each earn revenue from this model.
Okay.
So, for example, when a game is sold to SuperSport to broadcast, that revenue is then split between the various unions after SARU's management fees and administration, etc. So this is beneficial to them, and it's a material source of their revenue. And they weren't consulted, they weren't engaged with, and
the
they
unions
felt. Up until they wrote, I think, a 14-page letter complaining about this, where they were quite explicit that we will be voting this down. And some of the big unions, were back in this, like Natal, the Sharks, and
they were against it.
Bolt, yeah.
Yep.
Western Province, also, they were against it, but being under administration, they're not allowed to vote. Some of the smaller unions as well voted against it. In any event, it failed horribly short of the 75% majority it needed. Mm-hmm. I've been watching this since as early as like a year and a half ago. And when I conceptualized AltFest, it was actually a sports team methodology that got my brain thinking about how this would work. Because ownership changes everything. I've adopted a phrase now that no one washes a hired or rented car, right? But ownership changes behavior. So we kept thinking that if a fan could own an economic interest in the team, suddenly you won't buy the fake jerseys anymore, or you're less likely to. You're more likely to attend matches and go through the hassle of getting to Ellis Park and that kind of thing. You're more likely to watch it on TV or on the radio or whatever the case is. And if you understand that your participation in those events, going to matches, buying merchandise, or impacts you financially, I think that adds a different flavor to how you experience the game. And it works in other countries, PSG, Man United, those kind of things. And so it's always been the ultimate manifestation of the concept. And I've written to all the teams almost.
Yeah, we've actually, I mean, when Warren and I started working on this, we approached some of our contacts around rugby with the proposal, showing them that, wait a minute, we have an offer that creates a platform for institutional investment, sure, from a South African perspective, but all the way through to the fan owning a stake in the Springboks. I mean, why can't you own 500 rands worth of Springbok equity? Or 1,000 rand, or 5 million rand? And why can't there be a marketplace that's established around that locally in South Africa? Why couldn't we do that? And we started orientating this, but I think it's really matured into, we've got the partners on board now. We're proposing this model. We've put it into practice at a small scale, at a medium scale, and it's ready to go on at a grand scale. And essentially, the outcome of this is a South African fan in the parking lot through to an institution can own a piece of the Springboks. Why not? Even international folks can own a piece of the Springboks. But it's democratized, it's flattened, and it's available for all.
So would this be in the commercial rights organization within SARU? I mean, how would it be structured exactly?
So that sort of detail still needs to be thrashed out, right? We would need to be, you know, let into the data room, all those kinds of stuff. And we would need some corporate advisory firm to help us structure this in an open and transparent manner. So we would be very different in how we approach this. But typically how these things work is SARU would sell its rights to a ring-fenced SPV. And that SPV would then own the rights for a certain period of time and be granted right of use for a certain amount of time, or indefinitely, it could be. SARU would retain up to 60%. So we would want to buy between 20 and 40. Why we expanded up to 40 was really to just make the ownership circle bigger. That way you could have more fans participate, you could have more institutions participate and just broaden it out. You could always have buyback or clawback mechanism where SARU could get revenue back, but it doesn't actually matter. They could sell up to 100%. I think the public would tolerate that if that 100% was majority owned by South Africans. And and that's what the structure allows. The fact that it'll be a listed instrument means people can participate. And when I say people, I mean any South African, whether they are retail investors, fans, but all the way up to regulated institutions like banks and pension funds. Because it's a listed instrument on the JSE, a pension fund could come in and buy a million rands or 10 billion rands if they wanted to. So could a bank. A bank could keep it on its balance sheet. And the rationale of going as complex as listing these things and doing prospectuses and all those sorts of stuff is to broaden that anyone can buy it. You know, for goodness sake, someone's RA or could own shares in this thing if they wanted to. Your tax-free savings account could buy these things.
But you can play too. I mean, the things that we think are innovative are things like, you know, creating something on a Bitcoin blockchain with it, creating non-fungible tokens with it, where fans can own assets, create assets, memorabilia, shirts, things that are rare, and we can actually create a marketplace for that. And that's part of the vision. This is not just about investing and staying static. It's saying the fans can take this further. We can start creating these, you know, these assets, these digital assets around the team. I also loved what it does for the players, ex-players and present players, how you could incentivize players, how you could create a legacy for players and monetize that legacy in a very fair and equitable manner. So it's the ecosystem of benefits around this platform, from player through to the car guard in the front of Ellis Park, through to the fan in Cape Town, through to the public investment corporation that wants to invest in this, all flattens, all open.
And the platform that you're proposing this all gets built on top of, does it exist already or does it still need to be constructed?
No, it exists. It's called the JSE.
Okay.
You
spoke about blockchain, you spoke about NFTs. I mean,
it's BRC20 tokens. I mean, right. This technology is easy. Okay. We could literally build it in 2 weeks. We could have it available. Yeah. I mean, these things are real simple. I mean, we've got lots of marketplaces online already. We don't have to build our own marketplaces where you could take NFTs and shove them into those marketplaces where players can create. I mean, if you take a look at what the NBA is doing, they're capturing moments in time and they're creating digital assets around that moment in time and monetizing that.
Mm-hmm.
When a player scores a particular try in a particular way, that footage, that moment can be captured, authenticated, and something valuable can be created around that in the digital space. What we could do with this and allow inventors and innovators in the technology space in South Africa, it's not us building it. It's creating a platform saying, hey, go crazy. Here's a marketplace for it. There's liquidity in this marketplace that we're going to guarantee. And I mean, this is the ultimate South African brand.
What about a rugby crypto?
Yeah. Look, I know we this is not
not really that.
If the team wanted that, but that's not where okay. we would push them.
Yeah. I mean, you could have as an example in some of the thinking we did, where it's not crypto in that it's a currency, but let's say it's a fan token.
Yeah.
And embedded in that is maybe the ability to go and watch practices if you own sufficient.
You know?
You could go on a Thursday night before the game and see pre-match warm-ups as an example, or get discounts for merch, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The part that excites me the most is the ability to solve an issue that all sports people face, and that is how to successfully save for retirement.
Yep.
Now, imagine...
Very important for players.
FNB is the sponsor right now. You know, instead of someone getting a 10,000 rand check that they would spend probably that night later on for man of the match or whatever the case is, they awarded 10,000 rands worth of shares that go into their brokerage account, and that's there until they play. I mean, the players are actually the custodians of the brand.
Mm.
Every time they score a try, it adds brand value. Why shouldn't they benefit always? I think about a young 16-year-old running on for the Junior Bucks for his first time and his first cap, the first time he puts a jersey on. Instead of a round of applause, how about a round of shares?
Yeah.
And he starts his financial journey from that day.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, you can't just give someone a share or give them an option to buy a share. You compel them to do financial literacy training and financial workshopping and that kind of thing. So I picture the guys understanding how the brand and wearing the jersey impacts them financially and how it looks after them for 80 years and not 10 years.
I mean, think about the investor in Eldorado Park, I mean, places where we grew up, right? Somebody there can own a share in the box. And imagine this platform had existed over the last 5-8 years. Imagine what that equity would be worth today, considering the success that the team has presented to us. I mean, the World Cups that we've won, the various, cups that we've participated in, and leagues and things. And, we could have had, if we had this in place, yes, the Bock brand, but imagine that granny in Eldorado Park sitting there with 500 rands worth of Springbok shares, now suddenly worth 5,000 rand because of the success of the brand and the interest around it. I mean, that's the opportunity and that's the impact that we want to see.
Warren, you mentioned other sports teams that have done this as well. I think you said Manchester United. Mm. What have they done and what have their learnings been?
Well, Manchester as a entity, Manchester United, is listed.
It's a listed entity.
Right? So people can buy shares in it. It's a normal listed
company. Normal listed entity.
Okay. Ours is slightly different. Our concept is not to list that entity, it's to give people exposure to the entity. So the way we would work this, and it's an opportunity to show the role each of the partners would play. So Altvest creates the structure that allows for fan participation. Like I mentioned, we would be one of three or four of the private equity participants who, alongside Saru, own 100% of the shares in this new SPV. One of the others would be a company called 27Four.
Mm-hmm.
They participated, or they part of this consortium, because they have done democratization of capital markets for black asset managers in the country. And so they've opened up and democratized institutional investing. So similar to what I've done for retail investing, they run programs to introduce black asset managers to capital markets, and they've done that exceptionally well. And so they incubate, if you're a young black asset manager with a one-year track record, trust me, not a single pension fund in the country would give you money to manage. What they've done is they've created incubation programs where they go out and help these guys raise capital from pension funds. And oftentimes they create a fund of funds of these small black asset managers, so the risk is split and that kind of thing. So they've been doing that since 27-4, 1994, and have grown hundreds of billions in assets under management. Moreover, they have created and incubated and built professional black asset management firms. I believe the first black coronation will come out of their program. Then we've got Easy Equities, and they are experts at distribution. Mm. They've got in excess of 2 million customers. They changed the shape, incidentally, of what the Boxer listing looked like, right? The Boxer listing was just going to be provided. We banged hard on Boxer's door, and they did too, to try and get the Boxer listing and IPO more retail-friendly.
Okay.
And they ended up getting a very big allocation from Boxer, because Boxer decided that we would actually invite our customers to participate in that. And it seemed ridiculous to me that they wouldn't, but they eventually did. So Easy Equities will help us distribute this en masse to the South African public.
And explain how it works to ordinary investors.
Yeah, I mean, they've got many young people, many young South Africans investing with financial literacy, and they're teaching you.
It's been an incredibly successful platform, actually,
very
Easy
successful.
Equities. Yeah.
Yeah.
To enhance my answer on Manchester United.
Yes.
There are over 10,000 South Africans invested in Manchester United through the Easy Equities platform.
Oh.
That's incredible. Now, if you think what that number might look like for SA Springboks.
I mean, that's millions.
Yeah, millions. Millions and millions. I mean, they estimated that Springboks have 180 million individual fans across the world.
Wow. Mm.
Imagine if each one of them just bought 10 rands worth of shares. Mm-hmm. And that's why we don't need to be held ransom to some cheeky offer from an American company.
Yep.
We could raise this cash multiple times over. It's not really about the cash. I think the capital is the least. The idea is to find the best strategic partners and to make South African feel like they own this.
So you mentioned your partners in the consortium, 27-4, Easy Equities, and the third one is Rainfin. What do they do?
Rainfin are crypto guys, blockchain experts.
Uh-huh.
So they're currently tokenizing private equity stakes. They're tokenizing other assets that people can't get access to and making those assets available on the blockchain. So, for example, if you wanted 91's money market fund that's paying 9%, much higher than anyone else, you could only get access to it if you had 100,000 or more to invest in.
Mm-hmm.
So they're making this available to anyone to buy on the blockchain. Yeah, why can you not earn? Why do you have to earn 2% if you're poor and you can get 9% if you're rich? So all the guys share an ethos of just flattening the structures, making them equally accessible to everybody. And so we all share an ethos. We do it in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
But coming together, we can solve this issue for SARU.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, I know that, and forgive me if this question doesn't make sense, but there's a... clearly, in the sports space, including the Springboks, broadcast rights are a huge, huge revenue driver. How would a deal like this, if at all, affect partners like SuperSport and international broadcasters?
Well, the idea would be to, find partners who are experts at those kinds of things, right? But also partners that understand our issues. We don't want to make access to the broadcasting rights more exclusive. So we're going to have to find partners who are willing to find solutions, you know, the same way Gaten had the one match free to watch for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to need to find people who can make those kind of things happen more frequently, or find different ways to monetize broadcasting rights that don't mean only, you know, a million people in the country can watch the game.
So will that form part of the discussions that are going to happen now?
I think it would have to. Yeah. I mean, when you're structuring the deal, I think it's very difficult to comment in detail around how this would impact them tangibly,
mm-hmm.
Simply because the structure needs to be built. But I think the economics is not what we want to change much around how mm-hmm. broadcasting rights are purchased. I think what happens is it becomes more valuable, right? So if you're a broadcaster, if I love the analogy around a rented car never being washed, I think, you know, if you do have a fan that doesn't just watch and has no equitable mm-hmm. participation, if they do have an equitable participation, our forecast is that you're going to get more deeper, meaningful engagement. And with that growth of engagement, I think that has a promise to a broadcaster. You know, the viewership counts may go up. The engagement around the content associated with it theoretically should go up. So mm-hmm. I think this does benefit even those. Now, do the revenue deals associated with that change? Do those rights change? Those are things that are going to come out in the details when we've watched this.
Yeah. Okay. Now, you've spoken about fan-centric innovation using technologies like tokenization. Can you maybe expand a little bit for us on what that actually means and what it could mean in practice down the line once, you know, assuming the deal gets across the line? Mm. What can fans of Springbok Rugby expect?
I mean, if you think about it, you've got so many, I mean, NFTs came along, the board, Ape Yacht Club.
Well, NFTs still a thing.
They're still a thing. Yeah, people still buy them. They're still value. I mean, the NBA, and where we see it happening is in the sports world, in the art world, in the sports world. It does become niche, where people find value in a particular memorabilia. They find value in a particular moment, and they want to capture that because that's authentically, you know, it authenticated, it's repudiated to be the only derivative of that in the world ever,
mm-hmm.
whether that be a jersey through to a moment, through to an image captured. I think there is value in that. There's lots of platforms that do that right now, right? Online, marketplaces that you can go put your tokens inside of. I think there's some interesting things around tokenization that we would take a look at, but I don't think we'd start there.
Sure.
I think the basics is just to get the structure in place.
Right.
But I mean, once it's in place, the innovation that we can enable through innovators in South Africa, because I think this is the platform that will allow you, if you're sitting in Cape Town, you have a digital creative agency and you want to build stuff, we want to create a platform for you to build it and create some equitable participation associated with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. That's the problem.
But the details will still be
ironed
out. All right, then lastly, maybe Warren, where does this go to next? Have you had engagements at this stage with SARU? How do you see this process unfolding in the coming weeks and months?
All right. So SARU have signed an exclusivity with ACLI that expires at the end of this calendar year.
Okay, so the Americans could still come back with another proposal.
Yeah. I don't think that that's a real risk. I think that well has been poisoned, and I don't think there's anything they could do that could change that. Moreover, I think they'll struggle to find any South African at their desk in the next 2 weeks. So
I'll say something. You know, it's actually a very good thing that they've gone through this process. I see it as, I mean, I had a discussion with Warren about it. I think it's a positive.
Mm.
Let them get this out of their system where you've got this foreign American brand trying to come in, et cetera, and the whole machinations and how it's unfolded. I think it was a good thing. Now we kind of have the ability to contrast the offer relative to what they've experienced. We're saying, no, here's a more South African derivative of this thing. And I think it's going to gain greater support and greater interest because they've gone down this path. So I think in the end, what they've gone through, I see it's a positive for us.
Mm-hmm.
I think it really, really is. Let them, now that they've watched that and they've realized that that's not what the public wants, that's not what we want as South Africans, it gives us an opportunity at the table now to offer something that's tangible.
What is the real pressure here behind the scenes, though? SARU needs to raise money, yeah?
Yeah.
That's the long and short of it.
Yeah, it's commercial. Okay. Yeah, I mean, they're an entity. They've made it very clear that they've got budget concerns.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, we're there saying, hey, let's fix this with you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, sorry, just to continue with the process.
So the process would be we all at least have downtime for at least the next 2 weeks as far as this process is
concerned. You guys too?
Yeah.
Okay.
My team would have walked out if I said, guys, we're starting a due diligence on Christmas Eve, right?
Right.
Anyway, where I hope this goes is that SARU decide to do a sort of transparent public process to find the best partners.
Mm-hmm.
I think we would naturally be invited to that. Ours is not a winner-take-all type approach. We would want to partner with other stakeholders who are interested in this asset and enhance their proposal. Because I don't think, with respect, that anyone else can bring this component of it, right? So we would want to work with the likes of the Rupert and Groot Schalk if they put an offer in. We wouldn't want to compete against them. We would want to work with them. And
Rupert being Johan Rupert.
Yeah.
Have they expressed some sort of interest at this
yes.
stage?
Yes. They've expressed that they have some interest. I don't think they've submitted a proposal. And so we went quite public about it because we want everyone to get what we do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't a cheeky marketing stunt or anything like that, but we wanted people to understand what is at stake here and how the country could do this. This would be like a world first. And I think it could create a model for national team ownership and even provincial team ownership that goes forward. But to conclude the thought, I hope to be invited in the new year to some type of roundtable where this is crafted for the betterment of South Africa and for the team and for SARU and to bring our partners and capital along. I also don't necessarily think that an international partner is a bad thing, provided they don't adopt a winner-takes-all approach either. When you look at the Americans and how they monetize sport, like the NFL or UFC or WWE or anything they do, they seem to be masters at commercialization. It would be idiotic of us to not have a partner like that or to not learn from them or to not consult with them in pursuing this.
So would you be open then to new members potentially joining this consortium?
Absolutely.
Yep. Okay. Okay. Great.
Yeah.
Stafford, any final thoughts from your side on...
Look, I just as chairman, I mean, I love what the team's doing. Mm. I love being part of the story. And as South Africans, we want to see this happen. I think we've got the assets. We've got the capability. We've got the funders, they're ready, and we've got the team to execute against us. So hopefully we are given a seat at the table to participate and posit this and unpack this and make it happen. So I think it's very, very exciting. You know, from a technological perspective, I'm very excited about it. I mean, through from creating these assets from an NFT perspective through to creating like a Bitcoin reserve for the Springbok team, or maybe we could do something like that. Also, the basic technological stuff too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I want to see this happen. I'm here as a South African. I'm glad I'm part of this team. And this is a very, very capable team. I've seen them execute against some of these deals. So they move rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
The financial instrumentation is the experience is deep within the team. And, I mean, we could do this in months if there was appetite to do that. And I think it would be one of the most exciting things to happen in South Africa from a brand perspective. Because the Springboks, let's be honest, is one of our top brands, if not the top brand right now. So yeah, we respect it. We want to see it grow. We want to see South Africa become a part of it. And I think that's the conviction behind it. Yeah.
Well, I really look forward to seeing how this unfolds in the new year. And I do hope you two manage to get a bit of a break over the festive season. Stafford Marcy is chairman of AltVest Capital and Warren Wheatley is the company's CEO. Thanks for sharing the story with Tech Central. Much appreciated.
Thanks.
Great.
Thanks, Duncan.
Thank you.